Morning, Chairman Stephen Mayne, shareholder.
Hello.
I've just got a few short questions. Firstly, on the accounts, the net assets are stated at $490 million. Obviously, we're performing extraordinarily well as a company. It's just a finicky thing, I guess. Why aren't we actually valuing our management contracts so that the balance sheet does better reflect the true worth of the company? I mean, if you look at the balance sheet and you look at the market cap, it's almost a case of never the twain shall meet.
Well, I hope it keeps going that way. That's where the premium comes in. We had management agreement valued some time ago, but we decided that it would be, well, there's a note in the balance sheet to identify the value of that. But we decided that at that time, after lengthy negotiations with authorities, that we didn't want to have that reflected in our balance sheet. It's an intangible asset, and we prefer to do it that way. People who want to value the company, they read the notes as well as the accounts, and they make up their mind what the value is. But I said I hope that the value between what is in the books and the premium grows.
I appreciate your comments earlier on the internet strategy. I was just wondering if there's anything more you can tell us. Obviously, there's a lot of hype out there at the moment. What are the other majors in the world doing with internet strategy? I guess the concern for a bricks and mortar retailer is that somehow sales done through any internet strategy that we do will be booked to the retailer's head office, as opposed to us being able to take our retail fee on the way through. Have you got any numbers on what share of retail market, say, in America and here, is currently taken through the internet, how you see that growing, and whether we can capture a slice of that as opposed to it being leaked off to head office for the retailers?
Well, let me tell you that, like you opened, there's a lot of hype. There's not that much substance. Although retail sales are growing, there's no question about that. What we see as our job to do is to come with an internet shopping facility that will serve the retailer and the consumer, and for the retailer to make money, and for us to get our slice, what we are entitled to get through the doing this process. And rather than join the hype, we are doing the substance. And we'll be able to come up with a formula that will complement our business and hopefully leave the competitors behind us. It's a very complex issue. There's a lot of technology out there. A lot of people are on the internet, not doing very much business. Some are doing a lot of business, making no money at all. On the contrary, they're making losses. And that's where the dilemma is of come out quickly and do something not so good, or wait a little bit and do your research and development and come up with something that you're confident about. And it's not certain then that you'll be okay, because this is an evolution that is taking place. Technology changes daily or hourly, and it's not a simple issue that I can give you these answers. The only thing I can tell you is that what we know, retail sales are growing, mainly in America, not so much in Australia. I believe there's some 200 or 300 internet companies selling. Do you want to say more? Actually, if you'd like a little more, David is doing that work for the company, and he can give you a little more and can answer a few more questions if you like, because he's doing that. So if you'd like to have more, I mean, I can give you the balance. But can you add something more to that?
Just add one point to that. Our research has shown that for every sale made on the internet in the United States, two more sales are researched on the internet and people go into the shops to buy. Our view is that this is expanding the overall retail market, and we believe that we can take advantage of the internet to grow our market share.
Well, also, I think I mentioned to you in my report that the Westfield brand is a great value to the company. And in effect, we have 550 million bytes, so to speak, what they call shopping visits. We have already in our centers And I think that the combination of these two is a very big asset to the company, and we'll be able to, we'll hope to cash in on that in due course. But we will not be rushing with something that we're not confident that will work, and hopefully the retailers and us will make money at the same time.
Chairman, I just wonder if the Deputy Chairman could further illuminate on his earlier remarks. Obviously, the context to these remarks are that the company is obviously performing extremely well, the profits are going up, and you are seen as the key to the success. Even so, I think it's a legitimate question to ask that I think you are the highest paid Australian-based executive in Australia, according to a survey in the Financial Review the other day. And your salary is at this stage about 6% of net profit and about 11% of the total dividend payout to shareholders. Now, the executive chairman of PBL, James Packer, doesn't take a salary at all. I think Solomon Liu, when he was executive chairman at Coles Myer, had a similar policy. And then again, Rupert Murdoch, executive chairman at News Corp, draws, I think, a slightly larger salary than you. How long is the arrangement in place going forward on this percentage share of profit? Is it 3 years, 5 years? And given that your equity investment in the company is worth in the order of $1.3 to $1.4 billion, I think I'd make an argument that the salary would seem to be slightly excessive, and that there could be a higher dividend flow to the minority shareholders, such as myself, if your salary was more in line with the rest of the market in Australia.
Okay. I think I'll attempt to say a few words, and then maybe Mr. Hilmer can supplement it. I have had an arrangement with the company for many years, which was, I think, at the time, was a five-year contract. And I think it didn't expire, but it's to be renewed from year to year. And it was decided that about 5-6 years ago that I'd be granted no options. And the agreement to remain in place that was there before, there is a profit share of a percentage of the company. It's my incentive. And I really don't like to defend this thing, but I think you're asking me, so I'll say it. If you add all the options and all the other benefits that other executives receive, you probably find that there are not that much discrepancy. Also, I think if you add, first of all, my base salary is quite small in relative terms, and the percentage of profit is that gives me the benefit, but from every cent that or every dollar that I get, the shareholders get a lot more, which they are entitled to more. And as I said, if you make comparison, if you add all the options that are granted to certain chief executives, chairman, and mine, you'll probably find the discrepancy is not so great. Also, I think I must kind of rely on my record and the performance of the company, which I believe is unequaled in Australia in the last 30 or 40 years, and the shareholders benefit from it. As far as our shareholding is concerned, I am entitled to be a shareholder as much as and receive the same dividends as anybody else. But if me or my family are shareholders, it's got nothing to do with the job I do. Whether it's overpaid or underpaid, it's a judgment for others. But the shareholding of my family and myself has got nothing to do with the job I do. And what else can I say? Anything to add to that?
No, I don't really have anything to add. I think if you look at the mix of the package, it's a mix which is probably more weighted to performance than any mix of any comparable executive. This is a company, and this is an executive and a leader of the company that's had an unparalleled performance. And this amount is only paid because of the results of the company. There's no other factor that drives the amount.
And I'd just like to add that you make comparisons between me and some other chairman or executives. I mean, I don't, this comparison is not valid comparison. Whether they take, I mean, it's their own choice whether they do. It's the arrangement between themselves and the company. And you mentioned a couple of names which I don't want to enter into them, but I mean, that's how it is.
I'll just ask a couple of questions at once now for the last time on this issue. I was chatting to someone from Lendlease the other day who was saying that they have had to hand over some of the development risk and development fees to their funds as a bit of a trend in recent years. Development fees have been one of the great success stories for Westfield Holdings. Is there any suggestion or pressure coming from any of the funds that we should let them take some of the development risk and development fees going forward? Just a couple of the small things. Can you give us an update on intensity, whether it's performing better now and there's a chance that we can write back up the stake? And is there any further development you can give us on the GST as to how this will impact on Westfield, whether our funds will have to pay GST on the management fees? And also, just is there a broad wrap you can give us of the shopping centre development program around the country? I read something in the Fin Review today about we've had a very good program of community consultation around Fountain Gate in Melbourne. Obviously, there's still a bit of rumbling going on with Bondi Junction. What were the big sort of planning achievements, development achievements during the year, and which are the ones that you'd see going forward as being the most important obstacles we need to get over in terms of planning and development for our redevelopment program?
Okay. Can you repeat the first one, please? That's why I ask, give me a question one at a time, I can reply to them and so on. And can you repeat the first question? The Lendlease, yes. Yeah, well, look, you're questioning the basis of the company, of how it does business, how it makes money. I mean, the only thing I can tell you that we are doing fine, and we're not about to change the successful formula that we have developed over the last 35, 40 years, and those who do business with us now these conditions, and they still do come back and do business with us. I think it stands the market test, and nothing else matters but the market test. And I stand on that record. Whether we change sometimes, whether we modify sometimes, yes, we do. But it's we are not copying Lendlease, and Lendlease is not copying us. We are both doing very well. I think we have a few more credits to ourselves than some of the other companies. But we are not about to change the way we have done business over a period of time. And as I said, it stands the test of the market. They come back to us. We develop for funds, for partners, for managers, not because of our blue eyes or because they like us or dislike us. We perform. What was the next? The next one was GST. I think we'll be in the regime of GST. We'll pay GST fees like anybody else when it receives a fee and pass it on to the government or vice versa. There's no difference to us than any other part of the country change. We don't envisage any other change. There are some anomalies or perceived anomalies that we need to live with and ask the government at the time if there are any to make certain changes, but they are not quite now yet. What was the next one? To give you the development program? I think I have. You know, on the issue of, in my speech, I think I have told you about Bondi Junction, I told you about Hornsby in Sydney and the other developments right around the country and overseas. The issue of, there was some nice article about us this morning for a change about the way we develop and what we do for communities. And sometimes we get into conflict with the communities and authorities. This is business, you know. The door is not open to us. A red carpet is not given to us. Here, come and develop, do what you like, when you like, how you like. There are forces in the community that we need to consider, and we want to consider. We are part of the community. Sometimes we don't see eye to eye with the community or with the authority, but somehow or other it gets resolved. The complimentary report that we had this morning was a very good one. We achieved what we want to achieve, but we don't always achieve unanimity of support everywhere. But we try very hard, and we want to be part of the community, and we are part of the community everywhere where we are, be making major contribution to employment, major contribution to local charities, to local institutions, and so on and so forth. But there's a price to pay for those sometimes. There's traffic congestion. There are other issues that come up. And this is, I believe, is life. And we try to handle it that way. How our competitors do it, why they do it their way. If they're successful, good luck to them. If not, they'll have to pull their socks up and do better.
Chairman, I'll say at the outset, I asked this question wearing two hats, one as a Westfield shareholder and one as a journalist who's twice over the years worked at Fairfax. I've no doubt that Fred brings a lot of value to the Westfield board, and if you look at the quality of the Westfield board, you'd have to say of all the AGMs I've been over the last little while, it's probably in the top 10%. Depth of skills, all the rest. My concern is that Fred holds a particular position in the business community, being chief executive of Fairfax, and I know there's been a couple of examples in the past year where Fairfax papers have omitted to mention he was involved in an outside business interest in important stories of public interest. One of most note was the story on Pacific Power. Therefore, as a journalist, I believe that Fred, given he's heading the most important independent newspaper group in Australia, and that newspaper group is all about upholding corporate governance, public standards and all the rest, my view is that he should not hold any outside directorships, and particularly with a company such as Westfield, which often gets involved in issues of public interest, be they planning, retail policy, all sorts of things. So while I don't oppose his re-election per se, I do want to get my reservations placed on the record about his being on this board, given his role in another place.
Thank you. I think you mentioned the word independent. And I think you can certainly count on Fred's independence. And he knows when and what he has to do to be independent, to be perceived independent. And I remember when he, before he accepted the position, he told me that he's going to take that position. And my first question was to him, please, Fred, will you stay with us? And he consented to stay with us. And I'm sure that he in his position as chief executive of Fairfax and non-executive director of Westfield Holdings is in no conflict whatsoever. And if there was a conflict, I'm sure he would stand up and do something about it. So I don't propose to ask him to say anything to that unless he particularly wants to. And I think I recommend strongly his re-election. If I could say that...
It's actually just one important point.
I haven't quite finished. You know. I let you finish, so maybe you'll let me finish also. I think as far as independence is concerned, maybe your independence is in question in suggesting that. You're a journalist. You hold positions of journalist in various publications. And I think maybe your independence could be questioned on this subject. And I certainly recommend that he be re-elected.
I think you're probably right. There's a legitimate debate about my position. I would make the point, it's important, I didn't say it before, that if there is an element of censorship in the Fairfax press, it's a self-censorship. And it should be noted that Fred does have a policy of independence and that there's no suggestion of any from-on-high editorial decrees. It's just, as a journalist who's worked at Fairfax, I know there's an element of self-censorship. I remember choosing once not to mention that he'd been on your boat, for instance, off Saint-Tropez, and that was an element of self-censorship by me because I was worried about that. So it's no decree from on high, but it just creates a perception on the newsroom floor, which I think is best to be avoided.
I think we take what you say and we'll let the shareholders decide.
Chairman, I agree with some of the sentiments of the previous speaker to a small degree. Certainly the size of the issue to non-chief executive directors is as high as I've seen in Australia. Where I'd like some clarification is, first I'd say that the fact that they're issued at 5% above market is a welcome development. A lot of companies don't do that. The Tabcorp meeting yesterday...
Well, at least we got some good points.
Yeah. At the Tabcorp meeting yesterday, the chairman was making much about how they had to perform in the top 20%, and the hurdle rates were a bit higher than 5% above, but a small hurdle, nonetheless, is better than no hurdle at all. My point is that on page 67 of the annual report, it says that the Lowy family, the four of you, own 164 million shares. Yet on page 58 of the annual report, it says that the Lowy family owns 184 million shares. So there's a $20 million share discrepancy there. In being able to assess this properly, I think it would be better if it was spelled out how many shares DHPS and SM Lowy held individually, rather than it being grouped together. So we could then assess the increment of this options issue in the context of what's been issued before. It says here that Stephen Johns owns 3.7 million Westfield shares. So in assessing whether to give him another $12 million worth of options, we know that he owns about $35 million worth of shares now. But we don't know, in assessing with the other options to your sons, and I think that in future it would be better if that could be separated out, and it would probably be better if one of the independent directors could comment on this, given that it's literally a related party issue for you.
Okay, I was going to I mean, we an independent director will talk to this subject, but I think you, again, a little bit confused. The two figures that you mentioned, I think 160 to 180 million or whatever, are at different dates. And we disclose, I think, what is required and how it is required to disclose. I'm sure that we comply with all the regulations. If not, somebody would tell us. The other subject that you mentioned, that you want to know how many shares a person has before you agree to grant him options. I told you before that the shareholding and the executive position are two different issues. He can own one share or a million shares or 50 million shares, and he's entitled to the benefits as shareholder just like anybody else is here. And he has to be, he or she has to be remunerated, paid separately for what he does. So how many shares a person has or doesn't have really, in my opinion, doesn't come into it. But I think maybe I'll ask one of the non-executive directors, maybe Dean Lewis, I would like to talk about the size of the options. As you say, it's somehow related to me, somehow, quite somehow. And so I don't want to give you the, I don't want to kind of talk too much about this subject, but I think maybe Dean will help me out a little here.
Certainly, it's my pleasure to do so. There are a number of considerations when you're looking at options for directors. The first thing to consider is it's part of a total package, and you have to look at the total package. The other consideration on this score is that none of these options are worth anything today. The options that you grant today, and I hope you will, are worth absolutely nothing unless your shareholding and unless your share values increase. Now, the whole objective of issuing options is to concentrate people's minds in executive positions under the creation of value for all of the shareholders. And unless they're successful in that activity, then their options are worth nothing, unless your shares, your share value increases. The other consideration is, and you're talking, Sir Mr. Wilson, anyway, on the values that you have observed regarding Australian executives. We are a global corporation in Westfield, and you have to look at it from the point of view of a global market. Unless you look at it from that point of view, then you are really not looking at it from the point of view of our sphere of activity. We have to be competitive in the retention of effective executives on a global scene, and to compare only with what happens on local industry is an incorrect way of looking at the overall situation. I do not consider, obviously, because I'm one of those non-executive directors who was involved in discussion as to the relevance and the size of these allocations. I do not consider them to be excessive in any way, given the type of results which this executive activity has been able to bring to this organisation. I can't think of any organisation that I've ever been connected with at any time that can discuss as has been discussed earlier, the growth that this company has been able to achieve. It is quite unique, quite remarkable. And that type of uniqueness comes out of the unique effectiveness of its leadership and its management at the top level. I don't think I could add any more than that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Eddie, do you want to say anything else? Do you want to say something else?
No, I don't know.
To this subject? If you'd like to.
There's really not much I'd want to add. I would reaffirm, and I think it's very important, the distinction between shares that are owned and options. Options, there's no gift element in options. Options are part of a package that will become valuable if the company does what it has done in the past, again in the future. And that's what we all want to happen. I think the other point, that there are a couple of other points that I would make, just really some points of correction. When you look at option packages, you don't look at the number of options, you look at the value of the options. And so an option over 200,000 Bramble shares at $40 a share is in fact a very large option in Westfield terms, where the shares are not are denominated smaller amounts, more like the $9 amounts. So it's misleading to make those comparisons. It's not helpful to shareholders if those kinds of comparisons are bandied around and not corrected. The other point that I'd affirm, and I think you can see it in the numbers here, is that we are now an international company, and we have a number of chief executives of very major divisions that are competing globally. And if you look at the remuneration that is paid in terms of total packages to the executives, for example, in the United States, I think that gives you a very good indication of what global executives who are playing senior roles in divisions of a global company of this kind are paid. And they're the sorts of things that we as non-executives look at in seeking to come up with an incentive structure and a package that retains the motivation and is fair to the people who really put so much of their lives into this company.
Thank you. Mr. Wilson.
Sir, some of the speakers endeavoured to correct some of my remarks, if I may just correct some of their remarks. Mr. Wills talked about you can't compare Australian companies with global companies. The company I used, and I chose Brambles and I looked at others, was because Brambles was a global company, Mr. Wills, and to that degree is comparable. So your point on that had no relevance at all. I'll leave my other points, Mr. Chairman. I understand what options are. What my point was that they were excessive. I'm not opposed to them being granted options. I said that was excessive. Not one of your non-executive directors addressed the point about it being excessive. And all they talked about was understanding options, which, of course, I suppose most of this audience understand what options are, so their contribution to the debate didn't help at all. It's the excessive numbers, sir.
Thank you very much.
I guess just one last point, Mr. Chairman. You've made the differentiation between American... Well, you talked about global terms, but I think most companies talk about the American market and the Australian market. Now, given that the divisions that we have managing Westfield does break up into who's managing America and who's managing Australia, why are we therefore giving the same amount of options and not reflecting the different markets? And my last point, I guess, is a broader corporate issue. Is sometimes there's a bit of a problem, I think, in corporate Australia that you've got chief executives of other companies who've had their own experiences then stepping up to the mark as independent directors and judges. Now, some people here would know that Mr. Wills did a fabulous job running Coca-Cola Amatil, but I think when he retired, there was an $18 million salary package overall to him in his last year, which reflected his success, options and all of that. And people would also know here that Fred Hilmer has a large allocation of options at Fairfax that has no hurdle. So it's difficult for Fred to then stand up and say, I object to these options, when his own position would make him look a little bit hypocritical. So I guess there's two issues there for you to have a look.
Okay. First, I'll deal a little bit, Mr. Mayne, if you don't mind, with hypocrisy. You know, you talk of independence of Fred Hilmer, or you question his independence. You are here writing a story for your paper and using this meeting for the forum so you can have either a nice story or a sensational story or a real story. So, you know, I mean, I think I'd like to tell you something which was told to me a long time ago, and I think you fall in the same category as everybody else. If there's no conflict, there's no interest. The issue is how you deal with those. And I think maybe your questions here are under question here because you're here not as a shareholder necessarily, because you hold another job. And as a shareholder, you're using this opportunity to enhance your own career in journalism. Put that aside, because you have criticized some of my colleagues here. I think I'm entitled to let the shareholders know, if they don't know, of what your position is and whether there are any conflicts that you either declare or don't declare, or whether they like it or don't like it. Now, the questions you asked about comparative with overseas, whether we pay overseas, you don't know whether the executive that gets option works overseas only, or works in Australia only, or works in both places. The fact is that I'll just give you a little bit appreciation of what does an executive do. And I won't mention the name of the executive, but it's one of those people that are on this list, and it includes myself. In order to talk to London, to an executive that is placed there, in order to catch him in good time, you've got to get up 6 o'clock in the morning, have your wits about by then, and deal with that executive to know what he does, how he does it, and what results does he get. Now, you may get some answer. Next time you want to talk to him, it will be probably 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Now, in between 6 o'clock in the morning and 10 o'clock at night, you're not exactly sitting on a beach. You have a job to do here in Australia to deliver the goods, to make sure the shopping center is open, the money, and all the issues that come about. I don't think that you or Mr. Wilson, who puts these rigorous questions on us, has any appreciation of what it makes to make this company work, the way it does work, and the results that it achieved. There is no sacrifice that these directors or executive officers don't do in order to make a success. I mean, they have their young people, they have young children, they have families, they have other needs. But they all kind of compartmentalize. And you kind of stand up here and pontificating that we should give them 200 options when we will give a million options. I think you can rely on us and the executive, non-executive directors, and the scrutiny that we are up against you and against the general public that we're doing the right thing. And it's really the non-appreciation of the effort and the time that is put in to make this company successful. I don't want to be compared with Brambles or Lendlease. They do a good job what they do. Those directors decide what they do. The results are judged by the shareholders and the general public. We do the way we do it. We are good at it, and we spare no effort to make it a success. So I don't know whether I've answered all your questions, but I think I'll call it today on this subject. And I ask the shareholders to vote. I have a mover and seconder. And all those in favor who wish to grant the options to Stephen Lowy, please raise your hands in the green card.